This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, June the 19th. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. The extracts we will be reading for you from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Gordon and Liz Legg. Before we begin, a couple of regular notices for you. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And just another reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene will help you with that also. Just give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again, 01962 870 370. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you might find it more convenient to access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on the news on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter, and your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And today we're pleased to welcome Tony Bergstrom, our regular reader. Jerry Tuff is on holiday, and Tony is kindly standing in for her.
Hello.
Now, on to the main headlines. Today we have men guilty for sham wedding, time to make a choice, the retailer drops plan for store. And the first headline story, please, Claire.
Men guilty for sham wedding. Three men have been found guilty of arranging a sham marriage in Winchester. The jury at Winchester Crown Court unanimously found London-based Devine Abanda, Armand Djedji and Olivia Atti guilty of conspiracy to obtain leave to remain in the UK by deception. The trial had heard Djedji and Atti arrange the ceremony between Cameroon-born Abanda and Olivia Godfroy, who admitted the conspiracy as well as bigamy. Godfroy said she agreed to the wedding for money after Djedji failed to pay her £2,000 for a previous illegal wedding. But Djedji and Atti both denied they knew Godfroy that well and claimed she had only invited them to visit Winchester for a party the day before the wedding was due to take place. Referred to as the fixers of the hoax ceremony, which saw immigration officers swoop at the city's registry office on February the 28th last year, Djedji and Atti said Godfroy had misled them. Djedji, who is 30, said, "Olivia said, there's a party going on down there, Winchester. When I first asked her what sort of party it is, she said, oh, don't worry about it, there's going to be a lot of people there. Everyone loves parties, so just thought I'll go with it. She never mentioned nothing about marriage." Abanda, who's 27, claimed in court he went ahead with the wedding as he had been led to believe Godfroy was pregnant by him, something she denied. Defending Abanda, Simon Ward claimed French national Godfroy, who's 22, lied about not knowing him and they had forged an intimate relationship in January 2014. Speaking through an interpreter, Godfrey responded, "Maybe he dreams. I don't even know where he lives. I was forbidden to meet him, even talk to him, even to make any contact with him. So the answer is no." Mr. Ward said a Banda had suggested a ceremony at Winchester Registry Office, as he had relatives in Basingstoke, and the couple were told they would have to wait months to get married at Camberwell, as the registry office was being refurbished. The jury on Tuesday unanimously found the three defendants guilty of arranging a sham wedding so that a Banda could apply for the right to stay in the country. The jury were also told that in April, a Banda had married to a British national referred to only as Eunice. Judge Keith Cutler remanded the trio in custody for sentencing at a later date. After they gave their verdict, the jury was told that a warrant has been issued for the arrest of Atty, who's 31, after he failed to turn up to court for alleged medical reasons. Assistant Director Martin Huxley from the Home Office's Criminal and Financial Investigations team said, "This gang had a complete disregard for the institution of marriage and made a brazen attempt to abuse the UK's immigration controls. Sham marriage abuse will not be tolerated, and our dedicated specialist teams will continue to pursue rigorously those trying to cheat the system."
Time to make a choice. Winchester councillors met on Thursday the 18th of May to decide whether to walk away from the firm behind the regeneration of Silver Hill. Conservative rebels have forced an emergency vote on whether to remove TH Real Estate, formerly Henderson, from the £150 million project, which would develop a quarter of the city centre. But Winchester City Council remains contractually obliged to launch the scheme regardless of the result, if the developer can meet its obligations under the development agreement in the coming weeks, according to city officers. Meanwhile, bus operator Stagecoach has committed to using and possibly running a new station on the Broadway, restored to the scheme after contentious amendments were quashed by the High Court. The Guildhall motion was led by Conservative councillors defying their own administration. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, the leading anti-Silver Hill campaigner, has been joined by three Tories, one Liberal Democrat and the councillor's two Labour members. Council leader Stephen Godfrey has warned colleagues public services are suffering from delay on the project. In his report, which was discussed at the meeting, he said, "In the 18 years this project has been running, matters have got worse, culminating in the closure of Friars Gate car park earlier this year. Medical provision in the centre of town is vital, yet we have a doctor's surgery with GPs working from premises which are unfit for purpose, waiting with increasing impatience for the council to reach a decision so they can plan their future. We know there is demand for retail space and a threat that if it is not provided in our city centre, it will migrate to out-of-city locations. The bus station needs replacement. We need affordable housing. The first impression that visitors have of the city, whether arriving by bus or car, is very unfavourable. There is so much else to be done." He urged the anti-TH real estate camp to explain when and how a better scheme could be launched. The public can view images and a model of the 2009 scheme, which features 96,000 square feet of retail space, 330 parking spaces and 287 homes, including 100 at discount rates. The exhibition is at Winchester's Guildhall Courtyard until next Thursday, the 25th of June. Councillor Gottlieb told the Chronicle, "The 2009 scheme is a scheme that nobody really wants. A lot of excuses are being made and a lot of confusion being created, all of which is intended to avoid doing the right thing now. The right thing now is to terminate the contract, get the right consultants on board, make sure we've got the right concept, and then put it out on the open market. The Liberal Democrats, who could outnumber the ruling group with the support of Labour and another Tory rebel, declined to discuss how they will approach tonight's vote. Last night's vote. If council votes to abandon TH Real Estate, the firm will have 20 working days to meet the scheme's final conditions, including proof that it is financially viable, and set it in motion. Legal action against the City Council would be a possibility.
Retailer drops plan for store. Sainsbury's has scrapped plans for a new superstore in Bishop's Waltham. The retailer confirmed that its Abbey Mills store, expected to create 200 jobs and replace the town's struggling doctor's surgery, was no longer viable, and hopes that the brownfield site could be used for housing in place of currently earmarked greenfields were all but dashed on Tuesday by Winchester City Council. The news marks the end of a six-year battle for the future of the market town, which mobilised hundreds of locals to protest in 2009 and 2010. A Sainsbury's spokesman said, "We have not taken this decision lightly and are very disappointed we are not able to open a new shop." Since the proposals were announced, shopping patterns have changed considerably, and following a review, the scheme is no longer viable for us. The site is now for sale. Many residents hope it will be used for housing, protecting green fields from development under Winchester City Council's local plan for 500 new homes. But Steve Opachik, Council Head of Strategic Planning, said a buyer would have to move quickly to force a rethink of the plan. "It's difficult to see how we could put in a policy for this site, out of the blue almost, at this stage of the local plan process," he said. "It means Abbey Mill could be developed on top of the 500 homes earmarked under local plan, some of which are due to be built on greenfield sites. A £1.6 million GP surgery was part of the plans, relieving pressure on busy doctors. Doctors at the surgery met this week to discuss the future. However, nobody was available for comment." The controversial proposals, first announced in 2009, split Bishop's Waltham during a long planning battle. Eric Birkbeck, who led the pro-Sainsbury's Alternative View campaign, said, "It hurts. Bishop's Waltham is going to increase its size over the next 20 to 25 years. There will be an increase in housing through the local development framework, and that will not be met by having two shops in the high street and a small Budgens store." Tony Kippenberger, who led the anti-Sainsbury's Bishop's Waltham Action Group, said, "We are delighted that the threats we saw to the high street and all the other issues that a large store on the outskirts of town would bring are gone."
And we're going to read you the death notices now, followed by Claire with Christian comment. Beagley, Annie Irene Constant Beagley, Renee, peacefully at home on the 4th of June, aged 95.
Blake, Dorothy Adelaide Blake, on 14th June, aged 100 years and 5 months, at Devonish House.
Crickmore, Fiona Crickmore, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 10th of June, aged 42.
Hedges, Brenda Curtis Hedges, formerly of Alsford, peacefully aged 88 at Wisteria Lodge Nursing Home on the 11th of June.
Hutchins, Richard James Hutchins, on the 5th of June, aged 94 years.
Paddington, Rodney Paddington, in his 95th year on 7th June.
Parker, Ivor Parker, after a long and happy life, peacefully, on the 8th of June, aged 94.
Rogers, Ralph Rogers, late of Abbots Barton, after a long and happy life, peacefully on the 8th of June, aged 94.
Rushton, Phyllis Rush Rushton, aged 101, on the 8th of June, peacefully.
Shannon, Peter John Shannon, on 8th June, aged 80.
Winter, Malcolm Winter, late of Twyford, Hampshire, at Basingstoke Hospital on the 5th of June.
And Christian comment now, Claire. Mary Gray, I think, is the contributor this week.
Indeed she is. And she has headed it, yes, St Francis, A View Beyond the Birdbath. Sometimes serendipity hits us. At least some might call it chance and others grace. On Saturday, we decided to have a celebration for St Francis in our garden. We had installed a statue where the saint looks out to the river and seems to embrace all creation. Then what do we hear but that today, Thursday, June the 18th, is the day when Pope Francis brings out an encyclical on creation and the environment. What's more, he has called it Laudato Si, be praised my Lord, which are the first two words of St. Francis of Assisi's famous Canticle of Creation. Be praised, O Lord, for all your creatures, especially for Brother Sun, who is the day through whom you gave us light. And so on. Some will remember Franco Zeffirelli's film Brother Sun and Sister Moon, which painted an idyllic picture of St. Francis and St. Clare in the valley of San Damiano, near Assisi, with the goats, the sheep and the hens, singing wonderful songs of praise of creation. But why would Pope Francis want to evoke these memories? And haven't we moved beyond the friendly, cuddly image of Francis and the birds, Francis making peace with the wolf of Gubbio? What Richard Rohr calls the view beyond the birdbath, well, yes and no, Pope Francis is not the first pope to call for peace with creation. In 1990, Pope John Paul II, on New Year's Day, famously called for world peace, which is threatened by a lack of respect for nature. He even called for this in 2002, together with the Orthodox Patriarch Bartholomew of Istanbul, the Green Patriarch, saying that a new culture was needed, born of a triple relationship with God, self, and creation. Again, Pope Benedict XVI in 2010 on World Peace Day simply states, if you want to cultivate peace, care for creation. Back to St. Francis. This is no cuddly saint when he braved the Saracen troops of Sultan al-Kamil, nephew of Saladin, to plead for peace. Nor was he in doubt that harmony with creation would be achieved without a vast shift in lifestyle, in consumption, even personal and community sacrifice, what we now call cutting our carbon consumption. While awaiting this new encyclical, a growing movement has appeared. Pray and fast for the climate. Inspired by Yeb Sano, leader of the Filipino delegation at the UN climate talks in Warsaw 2013, when his country and hometown were reeling from Typhoon Haiyan. Members of the justice and peace movement in England and Wales have joined this, fasting on the first day of each month. Some fast from food, some from carbon consumption or food waste. Pilgrimage has also been adopted as a way to deepen ecological commitment and inspire conversion. Pope Francis must hope that by linking his words to us with the true legacy of Francis, there will be opportunities for cultural transformation before it is too late. And that was written by Mary Gray.
And on to letters to the editor. Now, you'll notice that Silver Hill is top story again in our paper. And Robin's going to start with the first of nine letters. Not all of them are about Silver Hill. Please, Robin.
Green scheme needed. Sir, several key decisions on Silver Hill are coming up on June the 18th and June the 25th. WINAC, Winchester Action on Climate Change, suggests that this gives the opportunity for a fresh look at what is needed to make it sustainable. This means buildings that don't waste energy, design that encourages people to travel on foot, bike or public transport. We need good facilities for bus passengers, whether or not it's called a bus station. It would be a retrograde step to increase car parking. Affordable housing. We agree with Councillor Godfrey when he says the crucial issue and the one that should guide our decisions is whether any given scheme is the best for Winchester. The best scheme for Winchester is a scheme which safeguards the future of the city and our children and grandchildren by reducing the greenhouse gases which pollute the atmosphere. Chris Holloway, Co-Director, Winchester Action on Climate Change.
Dermot Boyle says, keep it small. Sir, in considering current Silver Hill plans, Winchester City Council might reflect on Basingstoke's terrible experience in the 60s. Then, persuaded by the London County Council's vision of a new town, they allowed the demolition of the entire town centre and spent the subsequent years deeply regretting it. For years, the town centre was a building site surrounded by hoardings, and the final outcome was a town then, and still now, not fit for purpose. In Winchester, small-scale piecemeal redevelopment over a period would be much the best course. Dermot Boyle, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
This letter is from David Selby, and he's headed it, "It's a Travesty." Sir, I must commend Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Winchester's new civic leader, who has said that a bus station and cut-rate housing are now essential aims of the £150 million Silver Hill development. What was proposed in the Henderson publicity document of September 2014 was a travesty under the title "A Modern Layout for Buses to Improve the Travel Experience," and it gave itself away when it stated that it better meets the needs of the bus industry. In other words, Stagecoach were not going to pay for it. A bus station is a public amenity and can be paid for out of public funds, i.e. the profit from car parking of £6 million. The people who devised the 2014 plan could only have had contempt for bus users, as the buses were to use either the Broadway or Friars Gate at least 100 metres apart, so that changing buses from one area to another would be most uncomfortable in inclement weather and not easy for mothers with prams and the infirm in wheelchairs. Roadside bus shelters are not comfortable at the best of times, and if 20 or so people are waiting for a 60-plus seater bus, many could be standing out in the rain. In one city, I know there is residential accommodation over the bus station, which enables passengers to queue under cover and only venture outside when the bus arrives. With increasing pollution, buses should be promoted and competition encouraged. All we need now is for Councillor Godfrey and his colleagues to greatly improve the architectural design in keeping with our ancient city. Henderson cunningly show a photograph of the existing high street under the title "A Rich Mix," and it does look attractive. At the end of the brochure, the reader comes to what Friars Gate will look like. Overpowering slabs of high buildings which make no connection aesthetically or architecturally with the city that we love. What the architecture looks like is very important, Otherwise, we will have the Brooks Centre all over again. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
This letter from Councillor Andrew Gibson has the heading Wowed by Trail. In Hampshire, we are fortunate to be custodians of some of the most spectacular countryside in England. Our rights-of-way network is extensive and highly valued by residents and visitors alike, as our widespread consultation over the draft Countryside Access Plan confirmed. As well as connecting one place to another, it's about enriching quality of life, contributing to good physical and mental health, community cohesion, and a strong rural economy. So, as the new executive member, where better for me to see these policies in action than the Meon Valley Trail, where improvements are creating a safe, high-quality, family-friendly route for all. I was eager to see the progress being made so that more people can enjoy the improved surface, open views and information about the history, geography and ecology of the trail. It's not yet finished, and I realise that the surface still has to bed in before we can properly make a judgment. But I'm pleased to say I cycled it on Friday and was truly impressed. The path is dry and the surface is suitable for a wide range of users. I understand that not all change will be welcomed by everyone, but the consultation some months back showed support of parish councils, the British Horse Society, the Cycling Touring Club and local residents. The Meon Valley Trail was muddy and in some places dark and narrow with overhanging trees and poor drainage. In my new role, the key challenge is to ensure that by working with local communities, landowners, users and local people who wish to help, we maintain our important role in meeting and balancing those needs in a way that provides the most widespread benefit. Councillor Andrew Gibson, Executive Member for Culture, Recreation and Countryside, Hampshire County Council.
This letter from Arnold Jarman is headed Dangerous Mess. Sir, regarding Barton Farm, it would appear that as Kayla Holmes have decided that nothing shall be done, at least until the pound signs stack up into the right shape, we are left with an unsightly mess in Andover Road, with speed restrictions, lane closures, barriers and cones, all of which are totally unnecessary for the present position. It is a hazardous visual distraction and certainly an awful and untidy appearance. I think it would be good if Kayla Holmes and the local authority could get together and get rid of this mess completely and reopen the road, that is, until such time as there is serious attempt to actually start work on the site. Arnold Jarman, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
This is another letter about the Silver Hill development. Tim Fell, his title for this is Plan is Unsuitable. At an extraordinary meeting on Thursday, the City Council should decide whether to terminate its contract with Henderson, the would-be developer of Silver Hill. Because vital conditions of that contract had not been fulfilled by June the 1st, it can now do so without financial or other penalty. It is hard to overestimate the importance of that decision for the foreseeable future of the city we all love. Council leader Stephen Godfrey is absolutely right in saying that the crucial issue that should guide its decision is whether any given scheme for Silver Hill's much-needed regeneration is the best for Winchester, chronicled June the 11th. I applaud his desire to focus councillors and the public's minds on the key issue. The best for Winchester means, he says, a scheme that provides affordable housing and retail opportunities, caters for public transport, delivers appropriate architecture, improves the public realm, and can be funded. The question of what is appropriate architecture, therefore, turns on the answer to another question. What are the qualities and character of the city that the local plan says must not be compromised? Over the centuries, the city has grown organically with buildings from every period. Saxon, Norman, late medieval, Tudor, Jacobean, Civil War, Georgian, Victorian, and the 20th and 21st centuries, cheek by jowl in an exuberant jumble of ages, sizes, styles, and materials ranging from wattle and daub to glass and steel. If one had to choose one short phrase to sum up the qualities and character that this organic growth has given Winchester, perhaps it would be something like small-scale variety, the polar opposite of large-scale uniformity. Many people think what we are being offered is far too large in scale and far too uniform in design. That means it contradicts the wording that I have quoted from the local plan, and indeed to the design brief that the council developed and invited would-be developers of Silver Hill to respond to all those years ago. If councillors measure Henderson's architecture against the vision of the local plan, they cannot logically conclude surely that it is appropriate for Winchester. Tim Fell, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
This letter from Keith Story has the heading Puzzled by Reply. I thought my recent letter suggesting that pedestrians and cyclists should observe the road rules and motorists observe the new 20-mile-an-hour limit wasn't particularly controversial. So I was surprised by Frank Williams' puzzling response, letters June the 11th. His suggestion that motorists should be more observant of road rules than cyclists and pedestrians seems unfair when we are currently marking the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta, which called for everyone, including the monarch, to be subject to the rule of law. Mr. Williams tries to justify inequality by saying that because cars can cause more harm than pedestrians or cyclists, motorists should be more careful than the former. Is he suggesting that cyclists continue to cycle on pavements, jump red lights, or go the wrong way on one-way streets? And should pedestrians continue to cross roads without looking, in the expectation that motorists will be more careful and avoid hitting them? As for pedestrians being less dangerous than motorists, I once witnessed two giggling girls leap for fun in front of an oncoming car, causing it to swerve, skid, overturn, burst its doors and spill all four occupants onto the ground. The two grinning girls ran away. I've also experienced students playing chicken by dashing into the road in front of my car. Like Mr. Williams, I've also suffered from careless drivers and don't excuse them either. Lastly, he appears to misremember the purpose of the Winchester Meadows Conservation Alliance, which I led in opposition to the St. Catherine's Park and Ride scheme. We opposed it because it was wrong on the wrong piece of land, not because we disliked park and ride and favoured motorist parking in Winchester. We wanted it built on the nearby disused industrial site instead of on Winchester's only easily accessible, publicly owned wildflower meadow. I'll never forget the bulldozing of 50,000 cowslip plants and 212 species of flowering plants, home to 27 types of butterfly and 5 species of bumblebees. Keith Story, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
Mike Biden's letter is entitled, What is Fair? Sir, Mike Kennedy writes a very one-sided account of the debate on what will constitute a fair referendum, letters June the 11th. His main concern is that EU citizens who are settled in the UK should not be able to vote even though there is no provision in the bill for them to be given one. Yet he expresses no similar concerns about the millions of Irish and Commonwealth citizens who are given the right to vote. Surely either both categories or neither should have the vote, if it is to be fair. More importantly, in the cause of fairness, we need to give everyone over 16 years old a say. The Scottish referendum set the precedent, and it would now be grossly unfair to deny their English counterparts the same. It is, after all, their future. And I defy anyone to defend why a 16 or 17-year-old should not have the vote, while anyone over, say, 85 or 90 does. Why does ageism only apply at one end of the spectrum? 16-year-olds are far better informed today than they were in the past, and are quite capable of following and evaluating the arguments and reaching their own conclusions. After all, it's nowhere near as difficult as a GCSE exam. He also expresses concern about there not being a period of purdah. If the government has a view, and we should expect that it will, then we are entitled to know it, and they should be able to participate and explain why. The reality here is Mr. Kennedy is following the already established line of defence for the outs, so that when they lose, they can blame their defeat on unfairness and continue their campaign. We shall then have another 40 years of increasingly noisy opposition until they're granted another referendum. Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
This is another letter about the Andover Road, and it's from David Hughes, who asks, "Why is the road shut? Sir, can anyone please explain to me why the southbound carriageway of Andover Road North remains obstructed by traffic cones and a rather ridiculous 30 miles an hour speed limit some 2 months after the roadworks there were completed? Everything was cleared away for a few days on one occasion a few weeks ago, only to mysteriously reappear. For the life of me, I cannot see why any plausible reason why motorists should be hampered in this way." David Hughes, Downlands Way, South Wanston.
If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. 01962 860 836. Or you can email all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And staying with opinions of the public, the Chronicle Your Say column this week poses the question about schools banning handstands and cartwheels in the playground. They ask, has health and safety gone too far? Perhaps you'd read the answers to that, please, Tony.
Yes, Judith McPherson, 81, retired, of Waltham Chase, Droxford, said, "Yes, why shouldn't children do handstands and cartwheels? It's ridiculous. Children should be able to do things at playtime." And Nikki Lynn Xavier, 46, Managing Director of Xavier Athletica, Winchester, said, "With kids getting fatter, it's absolutely vital that they're allowed and encouraged to do sport. I think the emphasis on health and safety is wrong. It's gone too far." And James Tracy Burner, 33, Learning Support Assistant of Pound Road, Kingsworthy, said, "In some aspects, it has, but obviously there are two sides to everything, because the staff are trying to minimise any accidents for the children." Michael Fremantle, 66, retired, of Maypold Villas, Albrook, said, "Health and safety in everything is going too far. Children have got to be allowed to be children. I have 8 grandchildren, and people are too hygienic today.
And now we're moving to editorial comment, and it's headed this week, Still Time to Sever Ties with Developer. On Thursday, the 18th of June, city councillors will discuss a motion calling on the council to end the Silver Hill development agreement with TH Real Estate. The anti-campaigners called this extraordinary meeting and want the council to sever ties with the developer. There is still time, they say. It is possible, but unlikely, that councillors will agree, especially as the new leader, Stephen Godfrey, appears committed to the current scheme. It's now or never for the anti-campaigners. Defeat at this meeting, and it is hard to see how the development in its present form can be stopped. But questions remain, not least the credibility of the developer and its flip-flopping over the 2009 scheme that it now champions.
This week's piece by George Hayter has the heading, A Tape Brings Friendship. Idly surfing the internet, I found there are dozens of hypnotherapists in Hampshire. There seem to be half a dozen clinical hypnotists in Winchester alone. That's more than there are GP surgeries. I'm not suggesting that hypnotists get through as many patients as NHS health centres, but their profusion does suggest hypnotherapy is a growing trend. That's a good thing. I've no doubt that hypnotic trance can improve the nation's health, for example, by helping people reduce stress, quit smoking, or lose weight. I have myself experienced the life-changing power of hypnotism. And that was without even visiting a hypnotherapist. In fact, without being hypnotised by any person. I was hypnotised by a cassette tape. Like most people, I always doubted that I could be hypnotised. I even doubted whether hypnosis was real, until I was browsing in a health food shop and came across a selection of hypnotic tapes and bought one. That was over 30 years ago. The audio cassette I bought was How to Attract Love. Doubting that it would have much effect, I nevertheless gave it a try. The tape began with a silence that lasted 5 or 6 minutes.
Oh.
Then Barry came on. I can't recall his surname, but I know that Barry had the most compelling voice. Slow, relaxing, and nice. In his reassuring bass, Barry explained how the tape would work. I had to listen to it while awake and while asleep, he explained. That way, it would act on both my conscious and subconscious. He counted me down. You're feeling sleepy, 10. Going ever deeper now, 9. And so on. I didn't fall asleep, but it was pleasant listening to 30 minutes or so of Barry, who told me to imagine myself to be a glass vessel filling with orange juice, which then flowed out, taking my troubles with it. That night, I went to bed, put headphones on, started the tape and turned the light out. By the time Barry had counted down to about 4, I think I was asleep. Cut to next day. I go to work and find myself getting on with people much better than usual. I was surprised. I was normally fairly reserved, but there was in the office, laughing, joking, and putting my arm around people. I had never been such a person to put his arm round anyone much. I liked the new popular me, and I tried to listen to Barry every day and every night, readily submitting to his benevolent voice. In those days, I worked for BBC TV, and the effect of the tape was striking when I was rostered to work on the old grey whistle test. Normally, I performed my graphics role on programmes in a modest way, keeping myself pretty much to myself. But the tape had me chatting to everyone from the cameraman to the producer, still laughing and putting my arm round my colleagues in a quite natural way which people warmed to. In rehearsals, the production team was sitting at a table in front of the stage. I was soon sitting at the table with them, talking to Annie Nightingale and the other presenter. I forget his name. As the months passed, I found that Barry's influence on me did fade a bit. Gradually, the tape had less effect. A few years ago, I bought another hypnosis tape. It was about career success, making money or something like that. But it didn't work. It was made by an awful celebrity hypnotist. I think you have to like your hypnotist enough to be willing to subjugate yourself to him or her. Bear that in mind if you do seek help from a hypnotherapist. With a hypnotist you trust, I believe the effects of hypnotism can be wonderful. It may be coincidence, but shortly after I bought the tape, without attracting love, I met the woman who is now my wife.
What a lovely story. I think we need a Barry in here, don't we? Oh, lovely. And now we're going to have three items from Belgarum, the Chronicle's alternative view of the news. And Tony begins with a shopfront story, please.
Right, not foxed by this shopfront. Occasionally in Winchester, there's a chance for a spot of retail archaeology when long-gone shopfronts reappear and, like the underground variety, quickly get covered again. It happens when a shop is being revamped and the current fascia is removed to reveal an earlier one. Often it shows how independently owned units are replaced by national chains. There is currently a fine example at 63 High Street at the junction with Jury Street. Christine Tulk of Eastcliff has written in about it. The old fascia, says Blank and Sons, auctioneers, valuers and estate agents. She says her Kelly's directory only goes back to 1971, when it was Flair Dry Cleaners. Christine writes, the original board looks 1920s. Who was the Blank and Sons? When does the board date from? Could Belgarum find out? Belgarum thinks he can do better than that, although he would like to hear if he's wrong. The very florid, distinctive typeface looks remarkably like the old branding of Fox and Sons, based at 70 High Street.
This piece is entitled Statue Clean is Delayed by Scaffolding. It seems our beloved King Alfred statue is somewhat in need of a wash, but he'll have to stay grimy for just a little while longer after scaffolding issues delayed the once-a-decade spruce-up. The 5-metre sculpture was due to be washed and waxed as part of a £4,425 project. It is hoped that the cake burner will be buffed to a nicer bronze by Lawrence Flood of Bronze Restorations.
New campaign against pigeon problem. Bad news for pigeons in Winchester. A chemical known as fire gel is successfully fending off the flying rodents. The substance is being trialled at St Lawrence's Church as an alternative to unsightly spikes and could be rolled out up and down the High Street. An otherwise eventful council meeting was told. Simon Finch, Assistant Director for Built Environment, told Winchester Town Forum last week, "The gel is much less intrusive when dealing with the problem, and the early signs where this is being trialled are positive. Pigeons don't like it."
We're going to read you historical items now, starting with 200 years and working backwards. Here is 200 years ago, June the 19th, 1815. Clergyman sets out future for church. We understand that the Archdeacon of Winchester, in the able and excellent charge which he is now delivering to the clergy, strongly recommends the formation of clerical societies, at which subjects connected with the welfare of the church might form the topic of conversation and various measures discussed. in which its best interests are concerned. We are convinced that from such cooperation much good would result to religion in general, and that it is particularly calculated to give strength and energy to our church.
100 years ago, June 19, 1915, 5 dead in Persian Gulf operation. The interest of Winchester people in passing events associated with the war is for the time being turned to foreign fields, to the Persian Gulf, from which regional intelligence comes that 1-4 Battalion Hampshire Regiment, whose headquarters are at Winchester, have been experiencing some sickness and that some of the cases have had a fatal termination. We can only hope that the worst is now over and that those who have been ill are convalescent. Authoritative news on the matter is very scanty. The local military authorities are not permitted to communicate casualties to the press. 5 members of the battalion are reported dead. And the second paragraph is headed, "Man seen pulling up shallots at allotment." Winchester City Bench. A soldier from one of the camps was charged with stealing shallots. Inspector Stratton stated that in consequence of many complaints, Police Constable Eames was keeping observation at St. Cross allotments the previous evening and saw the alleged act. Similar behaviour by others had been going on, and they had even started pulling up the growing potatoes. The suggestion of the head constable was that the man should be handed over to the military authorities. The magistrate, in directing that this should be done, said the matter was serious because the allotment holders were hard-working men.
Can't resist this. Well, that's your lot then. And Robin, please.
And 2 items from 50 years ago, June the 19th, 1965. The first is headed, "Winchester Honours Queen on Birthday." Winchester, in company with many other towns throughout the country, honoured the Queen with a royal birthday parade in the Broadway on Saturday evening, within a few hours of the Trooping of the Colour ceremony in London. Before a crowd of about 1,000, the Mayor of Winchester, Alderman C.H. Bones, took the salute as contingents from the Army and Navy marched past. Detachments from HMS Ariel, Leon Solent, the Royal Army Pay Corps and the Green Jackets were drawn up in front of the Guildhall before the Mayor, accompanied by members of the Winchester City Council, joined senior officers on the saluting platform. And the second item has the title, "Police House Plan Proving Expensive." Putting their own houses in order and erecting new ones is proving an expensive task for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority. The authority approved a £4,701 tender for the erection of a house and office at Denmead. The figure is about £500 higher than any previously accepted tender for comparable work. But the county architect says he has found great difficulty in getting suitable contractors. Chairman Lord Ashburton declared, "This is really very, very disturbing. I do not think there is any alternative. Heaven only knows where we are getting to. In a couple of years we'll be asked £6,000 for a police house."
And now, 25 years ago, 2 items, dated June the 15th, 1990. Development likened to the Berlin Wall. A new housing development at Chandler's Ford was likened to the Berlin Wall at a planning meeting in Eastleigh last week. The plans were to build 6 houses in a line across a site currently occupied by back gardens between Shaftesbury Avenue and Meadow Grove. But angry councillors who've become increasingly concerned about continuing infill development in the Shaftesbury Avenue turned down the scheme, in spite of a planning officer's recommendation, the conditional outline permission. The developer was said to have turned down a suggestion that the number of houses be cut to 5. And the second item is entitled Anti-Show Campaign is Gathering Pace. An anti-show campaign is being waged against the New Forest and Hampshire County Show, the organisers have claimed. Chairman Philip Gosling says the refusal of an office block by the council on the Brockenhurst showground has been followed by an accusation of polluting the area by using a forest road for access for the 3 days a year. Ralph Hayward, who wrote to the panel, is concerned about the deep penetration of traffic through the heartland of the New Forest during the 3 days of the July show.
And thank you for all of those, everyone. Right, well, those were our weekly regular features, and now we're going to take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. And it's a busy season in the area just at this time of year. We'll give you some information about some very interesting upcoming events. Tony has the first item, which is about the Winchester Arts Festival. And then we'll move on to Robin with the Hat Fair news and Claire with news of a midsummer choral picnic. It all sounds just wonderful to me. So, Tony, if you could start, please.
Yes. Businesses Back Street Arts Festival. With just weeks to go until the UK's longest-running street arts festival hits the streets of Winchester, local businesses and groups are getting behind it. Hat Fair returns from July 3 to 5, featuring both homegrown talent and international companies for 3 days of entertainment. Winchester Theatre Company's Wet Picnic and Blue Apple will premiere new work alongside performances and workshops by Spinney Hollow. Award-winning choreographer Kathy Waller, who attended Peter Simmons College, will bring new work, Louder Than Words. Winchester artist James McCowan launches a new company, As and When Productions, with a premiere of an interactive performance. Winchester School of Art student Rebecca Willis is donning her alter ego as Granny Willis with her yarn-bombing installation. And the Sweet Treat Company is supplying sweets for the Knowledge Emporium. The Chalkboard Shack from Alsford is providing chalkboards, and Chococo is providing prizes for the children's area. For the full lineup, see this week's special supplement.
Robin, please, with the Hat Fair news.
Welcome to Hat Fair 2015. This year there's a jam-packed programme in store for our 41st annual Festival of Outdoor Arts. With 224 performances, events, installations and workshops crammed into 3 days, there really is something for everyone. From weird and wonderful street theatre acts to stunning contemporary dance to interactive fun in the children's area at Cathedral Inner Close, and thought-provoking installations. Activity will take place across 20 sites in Winchester City Centre from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Friday the 3rd of July and from 8 a.m. to midnight on Saturday the 4th of July. So whatever the shape or structure of your day, you should find it easy to fit in a bit of Hat Fair into it. There will also be the traditional family-friendly picnic at Oram's Arbour on Sunday the 5th of July to round off the weekend. Hat Fair is all about the art of the unexpected, so do come prepared to be surprised and delighted. We hope that if you dare to venture off the beaten track or try something new, your curiosity will be rewarded with an extraordinary festival experience. Most importantly, we hope you enjoy coming out to play in your city. To help you find your way through the myriad experiences on offer, we've prepared 5 handy guides, which are freely available on our website. So whether you're a culture vulture, a first-time visitor to Hat Fair, or a family with children to entertain, select the one that's right for you. Finally, please do tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. This is your festival, and hearing about your experiences will help us make 2016's Hat Fair even better. You can come and have a cup of tea during the weekend with one of the festival team at the Talkback Pitch on the Broadway. Share your thoughts with one of our roving volunteers or get creative on our feedback wall in the train station waiting room when you're on your way home. Alternatively, you can email me on michelle@hatfair.co.uk. Here's wishing all our visitors, residents, businesses, volunteers and performers a very happy Hat Fair. Michelle Walker, Artistic Director.
This sounds very exciting. I can't wait. And now Claire with the Romsey Abbey concert.
This is called Midsummer Choral Picnic and it's on Saturday the 27th of June 2015 at Romsey Abbey, S-O-518-E-N. Bring your own picnic from 5 p.m. on the Garth lawn. Cash bar and refreshments also available. Concert at 7:30 p.m. in the Abbey. Imperial Male Voice Choir and Romsey's Mountbatten Community Choir come together to bring you an exhilarating evening's entertainment with folk songs, lively numbers from the shows, opera choruses and even a Beach Boys medley. Before the joint choirs of around 180 strong raise the roof at Romsey Abbey, enjoy the atmosphere with your pre-concert picnic from 5 p.m. Tickets in advance, reserved £16 and £14, unreserved £12. Complimentary pre-concert drink with each advance ticket. On the door, reserved £18 and £16, unreserved £14. And tickets are available from www.ticketsource.co.uk/musicinromsey.
Staying with concerts, on Saturday, June the 27th, there's going to be an Italian summer concert at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. It's at 7:30 p.m. They'll be playing music by Rossini, Respighi, Mendelssohn, by the Winchester Chamber Orchestra. Tickets are £10 with £8 concessions on the door or from winchesterchamber-orchestra.org.uk. That's www.winchesterchamber-orchestra.org.uk. Also on Saturday, June 27th, it's going to be a busy night in Winchester, we're going to have Sing Winchester Summer Concert, St Lawrence Church, the Square, Winchester, 5 to 6 p.m. A Cappella World Music Choir, and it's in aid of the Oliver's Battery Preschool Charity. Adult ticket prices are £6, with children for £3, and the under fives go in free. Telephone number here to ring if you're interested. 07 941 246 685. Again, that number, 07 941 246 685. Exhibitions on Wednesday to Sunday, the 24th to the 28th of June, Cascades, a Festival of Flowers at Winchester Cathedral. Saturday it's 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. On Sunday it's 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Adult tickets are £10 each. Under 16s pay £5 and advance booking is recommended. Open gardens. This is the time of year for beautiful gardens. And this is a new one, new for Thursday and Sunday, 25th and 28th of June. The White House, Queenswood, Broughton, Stockbridge. It's a developing garden of 1 acre with a small potager, mixed borders and mown paths through hay paddock. That's 2 to 5 p.m. Admission, £3.50. There are teas being served. And that's the White House, Queenwood, Broughton, Stockbridge. Still outside, St Cross Fete at Winchester. Saturday the 27th of June, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Entrance is adults £2.50 and the children get in free. And they have sideshows, Punch and Judy, train rides, country dancing, and it says here much, much more. Love to go to that. Let's get on to theatre. Theatre Royal Winchester. Les Miserables. Thursday to Saturday, June the 25th to 27th, 7:30 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. on Saturday. And that box office is 01962 840 440. Again, the number is 01962 840 440. At the Discovery Centre, right next door, there's an evening of musicals on Saturday, the 27th of June, 7:30 p.m. Again, more information there on 01962 873 603. 01962 873 603. And at the Mayflower, Southampton, here's one not to be missed. It's the curious incident of the dog in the night time. It's from Tuesday, June the 23rd, to Saturday, July the 4th, 7:30 and 2 p.m. matinees. Thursday and Saturday are the matinee days. So that's Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. I can thoroughly recommend that production. The telephone number, if you want more tickets or more information, is 023 808071 1811. Again, the number 023 8071 1811. Before the general news, I'll give you the lighting up time starting on Saturday the 20th of June. The sun will set at 9:23 p.m. and on Wednesday the 24th of June the sun will rise at 4:51 with lighting up time on that day at 9:24 p.m. And so on to the items of general news with Claire kicking us off, please.
And this item is headed Dentist Gives Back to the World's Poorest. Eating piranha fish, living on a boat, visiting places accessible only by using a machete and pulling out hundreds of teeth. Even taking on their own, to most people these activities might sound like a living hell or a particularly unusual form of torture. But for a Winchester dentist, they are a working holiday and a chance to give something back. While many travellers are packing their bags for trips to Spain or Greece, Dr. Peter Saund, who works at the Boyot Wood Practice in Eastleigh, is jetting off for a fortnight in Iquitos in Peru. It's an unusual city. Despite having a population of more than 400,000, it cannot be reached by road, and it is located in the Peruvian part of the Amazon rainforest. And after an inspiring trek to Nairobi, Kenya, during which he pulled more than 500 teeth from patients, he is ready for another challenge. He has been driven to help charity since his wife, Vina, died of cancer aged 43, and is determined to help those who live in less luxury than enjoyed in Britain. Dr. Saund of Sarum Close, who is funding the £2,500 trip himself, feels ready for the South American journey after experiencing firsthand the horrific deprivation faced by African families every day. But he admits the different culture and geography will be a test during the two-week expedition. Peru isn't quite as poverty-stricken as Africa, and they love outdoor life there, he said. I just want to go and help people, and I get a buzz from it. We have so much on our plates, and it's good to give something back to people. We don't appreciate how lucky we are, and it was a real eye-opener going to Africa. Some of them hadn't eaten properly for 2 days, and we had people who had been waiting all day for medical care. They had been waiting for hours and hours, and there was no crowd control, but they were very appreciative. It's a totally different mindset, and they are very grateful. Dr. Saund, who's 52, will travel on a boat along the Amazon to treat people in need, along with a team of doctors and other medical experts. The expedition is in aid of the Vine Trust, which enables volunteers to make a real and significant difference to some of the poorest children and communities in the world. Each year, it helps 100,000 patients in Peru by sending supplies on 2 medical ships, while it also has plans to replicate this project on Lake Victoria in Tanzania. The Amazon Hope Medical and Dental Program in South America was established in 2001, and the first ship was sent in the same year, followed by another 2 years later. The ships are equipped with an operating theatre, dental surgery, pharmacy and treatment rooms, and have managed to make illnesses including fevers and malaria preventable, curable or treatable. As well as the dental programme, the Vine Trust works with vulnerable youngsters in Peru, helping street children find a safe way back into society. Many are hungry every day and are targets for disease, exploitation and sexual abuse. But thanks to purpose-built children's centres, the Trust provides a home for 300 young boys. Dr. Saund said, "We're going to be on board with a team of medics and nurses, and there will be Peruvian medics who we will be supporting. It's not going to be a luxury, it's going to be very basic stuff. We'll be travelling along the waters and treating locals. We will have a surgery, so I will be the only dentist on board, and I will be helping people with their dental issues. They have no access to routine dental work, so they have no such luxury. From what I gather, they are very keen patients, and most of it involves giving pain relief. It is perhaps fitting that Dr. Saund leaves for such a daunting trip on July the 4th, Independence Day. But having faced difficult circumstances in the past, he will not be easily fazed. In 2013, he travelled to Kenya just weeks after gunmen killed more than 60 people in a terrorist attack at the Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi. If all goes to plan, this trip will take place in less trying times, and Dr. Saund is keen to get down to the matter at hand. I just love helping people, because all those people have nothing, he said. In Africa, they didn't have proper clothes or shoes, they haven't eaten properly, and there's no proper access to dental care. When we went into some of the slums, we had to have a police escort, because with the poverty, you never know what can happen. And the Vine Trust's site is www.vinetrust.org/home.
South Downs National Park Gateway opens at City Mill. There was flour, icing and 3 very fluffy sheep when a historic Winchester building officially launched as a gateway to the South Downs National Park. From Saturday, a permanent exhibition will open at City Mill, which will introduce people to walking, cycling and spending time in the park that stretches from Winchester along the Downs to Eastbourne in Sussex. 12 Year 3 and 4 Winnell Primary School children popped down the hill to try their hand at decorating sheep-shaped biscuits on Tuesday before meeting Peanut, Bubba and Cloud, 3 South Down sheep brought in specially from Wolfhanger South Down flock based near Alsford. Liam Labram, 9, said he enjoyed the workshop. "I have been here before and I have to say it is really nice," he said. "The biscuits were really nice. It was fun making them." The National Trust, which owns and runs the mill, has teamed up with the South Downs National Park Authority for the project. Stephen Sibbald, interpretation manager, said the mill is now the western gateway for the park and will inform visitors of what is available. He said, "The South Downs Way from Winchester to Eastbourne starts and ends at King Alfred's statue and runs right past the mill. We want to give people an idea of what's on offer across the park with information and inspiration. It will help visitors experience the national park to its full potential." City Mill manager Rick Weeks showed off the extensive map which was being installed and said, "It details the National Trust properties in the park. Very few people realise the National Park is actually on our doorstep here," he said. "It, the exhibition, is there to raise awareness of the park and the beautiful locations there are to see, the many attractions, and also to detail the National Trust work in the park. The National Trust looks after around 6,500 hectares in the South Downs National Park, over 30 locations, including Hinton Ampner House and gardens near Cheriton. The Trust believes the mill is perhaps the oldest working water mill in the country, dating back to Anglo-Saxon times. It was nearly demolished in the early 20th century, but survived for the Youth Hostel Association to use it as a hostel. Over the last 20 years, the Trust has been renovating the current building, which dates from the middle of the 18th century. Flour ground at the mill can be bought in its shop.
Plans for Police HQ are finalised. Demolition looming for Tower Block. The end is nigh for one of Winchester's most distinctive buildings. Proposals to build more than 200 homes on the Hampshire Police headquarters have been submitted to the City Council planners. Developer Barclay Homes has finalised plans to demolish the tower block on West Hill, replacing it with 190 flats and 18 townhouses. The scheme, which also include an underground car park and path for bikes and pedestrians, has not changed substantially since a public exhibition last November. But Barclay says residents' comments led to tweaks in parking, layout and easy movement through the site. Hampshire Constabulary has declared the 1960s base unfit for purpose and is moving staff to Mottisfont Court and to Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services headquarters in Eastleigh. The new estate between Romsey Road and West End Terrace would comprise blocks of red brick housing of up to six stories. 40% of the homes of between one and five beds will be available at affordable rates, up to 80% of market value. David Gilchrist, Development Director of Barclay Homes Southern, said, "We are delighted with the proposed scheme and believe it will make a positive contribution to Winchester. If consented this summer or autumn, we should be in a position to start demolition in early 2016. The timing of the demolition depends on whether a home can be found for two peregrine falcons living in a man-made nest on the nine-story tower. The Chronicle reported in March that Winchester Cathedral may take the birds, but it was unclear at time of going to press whether this is still an option. Outline planning permission was granted in 2007 for up to 294 tightly packed homes, but Barclay has downsized the scheme to allow for larger properties and gardens. The more spacious scheme has been welcomed by the City of Winchester Trust, but Winchester Action on Climate Change, WIN ACC, supports taller buildings with more homes and fewer parking spaces. The public can comment until June the 26th. Meanwhile, Barclay has been in talks with the Ministry of Justice to ensure residents' windows don't overlook Winchester Prison. Police have operated from West Hill since 1847, when a station and Chief Constable's residence were built. The current police station was built in 1966.
Rewarding top work. 50 years of public service by a Winchester funeral director has been recognised with the British Empire Medal. Richard Steele, 71, has been involved with charity since his early 20s. He has been on the committee of the Winchester Working Men's Housing Society since the 1960s, and of St John's Winchester Charity, which houses for the elderly, since 1988, and its chairman for 23 years. He is also former president of Winchester St John Ambulance. Many art lovers will know him because he was one of the campaigners to save Winchester Theatre Royal in the 70s and 80s, and is also a former president of Winchester Operatic Society. For many years, he ran the family firm J.N.O. Steele of Chesil Street. He remains chairman of the firm, now called Richard Steele and Partners, which trades in Chesil Street and City Road. Mr. Steele, who lives at White Parish near Romsey, said, "I'm honoured to receive this and get to visit the palace, which is quite nice. I'm delighted. It's very nice to be recognised." A Winchester man, Donald Brown, who worked around the clock for 5 months leading Britain's response to the Ebola crisis as it tore through West Africa, has been honoured with a CBE. Mr. Brown of Monarch's Way was named in the Queen's Birthday Honours for services to international development. As head of the UK's Ebola Task Force in Sierra Leone, he arrived in September to a pandemic spiralling out of control. "At the height in November, we had over 500 new cases a week," he said. "We're now down to about 10 a week. It was by far the most compelling and challenging assignment I have ever had, and I'd say the most important I've ever had." An academic from a village near Winchester, who has been honoured with a CBE for services to higher education and sport, Lisa Hall from Stoke Charity, is Professor of Analytical Biotechnology at Cambridge University and also Chairman of Disability Snow Sports UK. Roger Whitcomb of Barton Stacey, Chairman of the body that tries to keep business clean, has received an OBE. Mr. Whitcomb, Chairman of the Reporting Panel at the recently formed Competition and Markets Authority, was previously Chairman of the Competition Commission. Nina Lazarski from Southampton, volunteering coordinator at Winchester University since 2003, has received a BEM for services to higher education and the community in Hampshire. A Winchester woman who has encouraged girls to go into science has received an Order of the British Empire. Professor Avril MacDonald, Professor Emeritus of the University of Reading, has been honoured for services to women in science and for popularising the subject. She started as a physics teacher before taking a PhD and working as a lecturer whilst co-writing 20 school textbooks.
Winchester, still a costly place to live. Winchester remains among the most expensive places for first-time property buyers, according to new research. The National Housing Federation reveals the city is in the top 20 least affordable places in the country. The research examined average wages, house prices, and the limited capacity to save for a deposit. Sentinel Housing Association owns 36 new properties at Francis Gardens, Abbots Barton. Its chief executive, Mark Perry, said, "We joined the Homes for Britain campaign before the general election, calling for all politicians to make a pledge to end the housing crisis within a generation. We did a bit of local research at the time and found some really shocking statistics. Last year, in our operational area alone, there were 24,313 people on housing waiting lists, but only 790 new affordable homes were built across the same areas. Mr. Perry added, the average house price in the southeast is now around $340,000. That is about 14 times the average salary and four times higher than the national average. This is making it especially hard for young people trying to get onto the housing ladder. 10 years ago, 55.6% of 25 to 34-year-olds owned a home with a mortgage. That figure has now dropped to just 33.7%. This latest research goes to show that failing to build enough homes doesn't just affect people on housing waiting lists, it's also driving up house prices, making them even more unaffordable. The National Housing Federation says the root of the problem is the failure of successive governments to build enough homes, driving up house prices and causing home ownership to fall to a 29-year low. The Federation says the lowest quartile prices, or the average cheapest properties in Winchester, are $230,000 and the lowest quartile salaries are £12,918, making homes 17.8 times more expensive than annual income. It says 384 new affordable homes are needed in Winchester every year, far above what is being built. The figures from the Department of Communities and Local Government for new affordable dwellings and acquisitions in the Winchester City Council District are 2009-10, 150, 2010-11, 130, 2011-12, 140, 2012-13, 60, 2013-14, 120. No figures are as yet available for 2014-15.
Mariners meet for service. Shipping enthusiasts from across the county came together for an annual celebration at Winchester Cathedral. Hymns, speeches and musical interludes were all part of the shipping festival service, which brought together generations of sailors last Thursday. A colour party, standard party and flag party brought colour to the event, carrying flags up the aisle before leading the procession out at the end. Hundreds of people packed into the cathedral for the event, which featured a sermon from Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester. The bishop discussed those who spend their lives at sea and the difficulties it can present, relating their struggles to those of Paul in the Bible. Finally, the Royal Navy player read before the band played the national anthem and the procession led the way out of the cathedral. The Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester, said it's a pleasure to recognise Hampshire as a coastal county and have Jeremy Smart, captain of the Southampton Master Mariners Club, host the service. Also present were the Lord Lieutenant and the mayors of Winchester and Southampton.
Thank you very much, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Please remember that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. That number again for Irene is 01962 870 370. We thank again our editors, Gordon and Liz, and the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And many thanks, too, to our readers. Claire.
Bye.
And Robin.
Bye.
And a special thanks to Tony for stepping in.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you very much for listening, and we wish you a very good week.